3 questions for this week. Is this our last week? I don't think so. Next week we definitely have, and then we'll see. Yeah? If there's an Olam, maybe, yeah, maybe no. I don't know. It feels like I'm already feeling separation anxiety. Like, no. So, we'll, okay. All right, 3 shadows for this week. So, I got a text from someone, a WhatsApp. Hi, my wife and I wanted to get your Eitzah in terms of some recent events that have been happening in our family. Over the past few months, my sister had a very difficult appendicitis. Not sure if I spelled that correct, he writes. Appendicitis case, with a very rough recovery. Another sister had a bad blood clot. My wife had a very difficult pregnancy as well as a postpartum recovery. And lastly, my grandmother was just diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. My third sister asked her Rav if he thought anything should be done, and he advised getting their mezuzahs checked. We wanted to know your thoughts. Good? Shaila number one. First line of defense, getting your mezuzahs checked. Okay. Shaila number two. A guy came over to me. I spoke at an office in Manhattan this week, and a fellow came over to me afterwards, related to something that I had said in the shiur, but it wasn't exactly the same. And he told me he had the following thing happen to him. He attended a tzedakah event, a benefit for some organization, and they were buying raffle tickets. They were selling raffle tickets for some raffle that the that to benefit the tzedakah. He went to the event and he wrote a $36 check on his way in, and he handed it to the person at the table there, and the person gave him a raffle ticket or said, "No, I'm entering a raffle ticket for you into the raffle. Thank you, shkayach. Thank you very much." Great. They at the end of the evening, they do the raffle. He wins an $1,800 bicycle. Nice, okay, big win. $36 investment, $1,800 bicycle. He then looks, when he goes to claim his prize, I guess he looks at the sign a little more carefully for the prices of the tickets, and he sees that the cheapest ticket is $100. That they accidentally either didn't look at the number of the amount of his check and just assumed that everyone who was handing in a check was giving a check for at least $100, because if they're selling tickets for $100, why would you give a check for less? Or they, I don't know, maybe the person wanted to do him a favor or something. They gave him a $36, and then maybe they just made a mistake. They gave him a $36, they gave him a raffle ticket that should cost $100 for $36, and now he won the raffle. So Shaila is he allowed to keep this this prize? And if he is, like, is there any way that he can keep his prize? Like he said, what I did naturally is, I don't know why he thought this was the eight, so he said what I naturally did is, I wrote a $64 check to pay for the difference. First he said, I paid for the difference. I'm like, oh, so you paid $1,764. He said, no, I paid a $64 check to pay for the difference between what the raffle ticket should have cost and what the raffle ticket actually cost me. So that's Shaila number two. What does he do in that situation? Shaila number three. My friend Rabbi Isaac Rice told me someone asked him this Shaila, so I don't know who the Shoel was, but a boss has an employee who does things for him in the office, and every once in a while he asks the employee to take care of some, pick up his dry cleaning, get him a coffee, these kinds of things. You've had summer internships, no? Some of you, yeah, so he asks the employee to take care of certain things. So the boss says to the employee, can you do me a favor? My car is running, is almost on empty. Go fill up my car with gas. The eager young summer intern says, okay, sure. He takes the keys and he goes to fill up the car with gas. He does not crash the car. I know that's why I saw your minds were going there. No, he does not crash the car. He does even smarter. He goes to the gas station. He fills the car up with gas, diesel gas, and the car is now totaled. It drives a couple of miles and then putt-putt and the whole engine blows up or something. I don't know what happens with diesel gas. So now the Shaila is, does the employee owe the employer the value of the car that he just totaled? Good? So those are the 3 Shailas. Do you get your mezuzahs checked when grandma gets diagnosed? Do you, and other things go wrong? Do you what do you do with a raffle that you won unfairly? And what is an employee who, one thing is he's not going to be an employee for long, probably. What is it, the employee who filled up the car, the boss's car, with diesel gas? What's he responsible for? One. One and three, one and two. Okay, everyone seems to want one, so we'll start with one and then we'll see where we go from there, okay? Checking mezuzahs. Knee-jerk reaction, what do you think? First line of defense is checking mezuzahs? Does it sound like something we would be into? It doesn't sound like something we'd be into, but it's remarkable how many sources, if I say we, I'm making a lot of presumptions about who's listening. It doesn't sound like something I would be into, right? Meaning, but there are numerous sources that are, you know, pretty explicit about the protective nature of mezuzah. So let's, you know, there are two separate sugyas we have to talk about here. The inyan of checking mezuzahs, meaning from a halachic perspective, forget about any tzaras or any whatever. Are you supposed to check your mezuzahs? And if so, how frequently and how do you do it and who's obligated? And then there's a separate inyan of the protection that mezuzah provides. And then are those two things connected? Meaning does the protection that mezuzah provides or a perceived lack of protection in your life or just bad luck in your life, does that mean that the natural etzah is to check the mezuzah? And by the way, if the answer is yes, then you have to realize what the ramifications of that are. I'll give you an example. Someone came over to me, told me that he had a relative living in his house, and the relative became very ill. The relative ultimately passed away. He then had the mezuzah checked on the door where the relative was staying in his house, and it was upside down. So it's one thing to check the mezuzahs. Oh, you hear all these stories. They checked the mezuzah, they found the problem, and now everyone got better. The relative is dead. And he thinks he killed him by hanging the mezuzah improperly. So, I mean, if you're going to say yes, we have to deal with the ramifications of that, right? Meaning then you're saying that, yeah, Ken Zayin. Could be it is your fault. Right? So do we go that far? Would we go that far? So let's take a stop. First of all, checking mezuzah. Shulchan Aruch paskins in Yardeya Simin Reis Sadi Alef Sif Aleph. That if an individual owns a mezuzah, you check it how often? Twice every 7 years. Mezuzahs that are owned by the community, twice every 50 years. Wow! Communal mezuzahs must stay kosher for so much longer than individual mezuzahs. What in the world is that about? So the Shach right there explains that community mezuzahs are checked very infrequently because whenever we're dealing with something that's a tzarchei rabin, we always have to be more makel because everyone likes to pass the buck to somebody else. See, you know if you're a balabas that no one else is checking your mezuzahs other than you, right? That no one else bears the responsibility for it. You deal with communal mezuzahs, it's much easier to say kedera debetrei, lo karir v'lo chamima, right? Is that the expression Chazal have? If two people are in charge of a pot, it's not going to be hot enough, it's not going to be cold enough. Each one is going to say, oh, it was the other guy's problem. He was the one that was supposed to do it. That's why you have to have one person that takes charge in that. So since communal stuff tends to not get taken care of, we can't overimpose on the community, and therefore the mezuzah gets checked twice every 50 years. Why do we check mezuzahs? So a simple reason, why would you think you would check a mezuzah? What's the point? In case it's not kosher, right? Rashi and Yuma Dafir Aleph, two explanations why we check mezuzahs. Explanation number one, maybe it became possible. Okay, the reasonable. Second explanation, maybe it was stolen. Meaning, you have a mezuzah case, it looks like a beautiful case, maybe there's a bandit going around that's taking off the case and pulling out the scrolls from the mezuzah, right? Maybe it was stolen. So you have to go make sure that the mezuzah is still there, and that's why you have to check it. So a very different kind of checking, right? According to the first day of Rashi, what are you checking? To make sure that the writing is still intact and that no psulim happened, that it hasn't gotten word out. According to the second day of Rashi, what are you checking? Just that it's there, that it's not empty, right? That you didn't throw out the instructions, as the old joke goes, right? That it's still there. Who is qualified to check a mezuzah? So it's obviously most common to have a sofer check the mezuzah, especially since most people are completely ignorant of the halachas of safras and of stam. But it's not so much that the halacha actually requires that. Pischi Chuvin Yardesim Reisadial Sifkat and Gimel, quoting from a Chasam Sofer, says, you know what qualifications you need to check a mezuzah? You need to know how to read Hebrew. And that's it. If you know how to read Hebrew, and you know what words are supposed to be there, and what letters are supposed to be there, so take a picture of a mezuzah, and you know, letter by letter go through it, you're qualified to check a mezuzah. Now, obviously, if there's anything that's a red flag, there's a smudge, then obviously you have to then take it to the sofer. Also, equally obviously, this would only be true if it was once checked by an expert sofer who has determined that all the tagim are correct and all the and the tzuras alusios is correct and everything else. So now you just need to make sure that it didn't get ruined in the interim. But if you don't know anything about Safras, even if you know how to read Hebrew, you may not necessarily know about Chaktochos, and about, even though Chaktochos you can't check for, but you may not know about a lot of the other halachos of mezuzah. Also, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that the requirement to check twice every 7 years assumes that the mezuzah hasn't been exposed to any harsh weather or other conditions that could cause the mezuzah to deteriorate more quickly. If there was a hurricane and the whole street was flooded all the way up the first floor, right, of your house, so all the way up to the top of your doorpost, like in Hurricane Sandy a few years ago in certain places in Cedarhurst and Woodmere, people had to go to the second floors of their house because the first floors were entirely covered with water. Those mezuzahs need to be checked, right? Those mezuzahs that were underwater for a while, they went through something extreme, they need to be checked. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted in Alicho Shlomo on Tefillah, the volume on Tefillah, and Sofer do not like this quote of this citation of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. I've spoken to a couple of Sofrim who think that this is not correct, but they quote from Shlomo Zalman Orbach that if a mezuzah remains enclosed in a plastic and is completely protected from the wall and from the elements, you don't really need to check it. Tefillin never require any checking, and mezuzah is very, very infrequent checking because nothing is really ever going to happen to it. That's what they quote from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. A lot of Sofrim tell me it's not true, the Metzias Chush Meyed, that's not the case, but I don't know. That's what they quote from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. There's also an interesting discussion if you move into a house and you see like there's a thing in the door that's been painted over, and you can tell that if you chip away the paint, there's probably a mezuzah under there, even though it's 9.9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, that's the way to say it, right? 99 times out of 100, the mezuzah under there is puzzle. You can't just slap another mezuzah on the door. You actually do have to dig it out. You run a risk of baltosif if you have two mezuzahs on the door, so you have to go and dig out the old mezuzah. Good, that's a little bit about checking mezuzahs. So do we check mezuzahs? Yeah, we check mezuzahs. Stam, because you're supposed to check mezuzahs. I always point out, and it is important to point out, that a lot of times people have had their mezuzahs checked, or they've had their tefillin checked, but they've had them checked by people who seemed like very religious and nice people, and they are religious and nice people, but they're just not such great sofer. Because how do I know what's a good sofer? I know how good a sofer is as well as I know how good an auto mechanic is. I don't know anything about cars, so I don't know if he's a good auto mechanic. He tells me, a guy can change my wiper blades and tell me, yeah, it's $495 because we did the wiper blade adjustment on it, and I'll be like, oh, okay, $495, no problem, because I don't know anything. So sofer, I don't know what's a good sofer, what's a bad sofer, and a lot of people don't know. So it's very important to get some eitzah as far as who is a very good magia, who has a very good eye, who's going to be able to catch things. So that's a very important thing to know, because I've had many instances, we've spoken about this in the past, of people who've come to me, told me they've had their tefillin checked religiously twice every 7 years, and now at the age of 30 or 35 or 40, they found that there was a letter missing in their tefillin. Not that that something faded, that it was never there. It means that the person who checked their tefillin so many times over and over again was lazy, didn't have a good eye, didn't have a good power of concentration, or maybe was dishonest. Whatever it is, whatever the explanation is. So it's very important that it be checked by someone who really, really knows what they're doing. Okay, but the other inyan, the protection of mezuzahs. Does a mezuzah really protect you? So there is, the Torah quotes of Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed Beis, that if a person is careful about the mitzvah of mezuzah, they'll be zocha to arichas yamim, and for their children to live as well. And the Torah there writes, mechlal hein ata shomei alav. If by being careful about mezuzah, you're going to live long, and your children are going to live long, what does that tell you? If you're not careful about mezuzah, then the opposite is going to be. Then his days and the days of his children are going to be shortened, are going to be numbered, and that's a bad thing, obviously. Now, the Gemara mentions the positive. The Gemara does not mention any particular klala for someone who's not nizhar in mezuzah, and the commentary in the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Hillel, points out that according to the Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Samech Aleph, you can only say Mechal Lav Atashmei Hein, Mechal Hein Atashmei Lav, if it says that way explicitly in the pasuk. If there's no explicit pasuk, you're only allowed to deduce that if you're not careful with the mitzvah, that you will receive neither blessing nor a curse, right? Where, what sugi is this? Where does this come up? Come on, guys, you don't know this one? What? I didn't hear you. Maki Braveim. The sugi of tonight. Tonight, B'nei God, B'nei Ruvein. Right, if you help us fight the battle, right, then you'll get your land on the other side of the Arden. Right, and if you don't, then you lose everything. Right, you lose everything. Then I should be like everybody else. Then I shouldn't get the land I desire. But if it says explicitly both sides, but if it doesn't say explicitly both sides, then it just means that it's going to be nothing. So how can the Torah make a diuk? Oh, because the Gemara says that if you're very careful, then you'll have yirichus yom. So we make a diuk that if not. Then your life is going to be shortened. So the Beis Hillel points out that Rashi on Chumash does make a similar comment when it does come to Kibbutz Ave'im. The pasuk says Kabbidus Avicha Vesimechel Lema'an. This is why you mentioned Kibbutz Ave'im now. Lema'an Yarichun Yamecha. Right. So Rashi says if you observe Kibbutz Ave'im, you'll have a Richus Yamim, and therefore we could be Medayek, and someone who's not careful about Kibbutz Ave'im will have a shortened life. So but it seems to contradict the rules that the Gemara says, that you're not allowed to make such a deal. So to address that question, comes along the Chida in Birkei Yosef, and he suggests that you could distinguish between a deal that's made between two parties, either between two people, between man and God, and versus a statement of reward or punishment by the Torah for a given mitzvah. When the Torah talks about a deal, a covenant, an arrangement between two parties, right, these kinds of things, then the connotation is that the normal criteria of Tanai must be met. And Tanai means you need a Tanai kafel, and without the flip side of the Tanai spelled out explicitly, you don't have that flip side. But when the Torah just tells us the reward of a mitzvah, Saftim al Mezuzos, Pesachu Bishrecha, Leman, Yirbu Yimechem Mevenechem, it tells us what the reward is, then we're allowed to make that deal. That just as we would throughout the Torah, we can make the diuk in such a pasuk. So the Torah was written in that way to learn a lot of halachos out of diukim. So good, so first of all, the Torah says, arichus yamim for yes mezuzah, you're not careful about mezuzah, it could mean early death. It could mean early death, and that's a diuk we make from a pasuk. Second, the Torah says, the greater benefit of mezuzah is that it protects a person's home from any harm. The Gemara Maseches Menachos Daf Lamed Beis implies that there is a specific danger in leaving a house without a mezuzah. That's why the halacha is when you sell your house to somebody else or you move out of a house, you're not supposed to take the mezuzahs with you, because that is unfair to leave a house without the protection that mezuzah affords. So there is an inyan of protection. The Darkei Moshe, the bottom of the Torah, in some Reish Pei Vav, implies that in order to enjoy that protection, you have to have a mezuzah on every doorpost of the house, not just the front door. Meaning, not only is the halacha, does the halacha require every door have a mezuzah, the inyan of protection is only when every door has a mezuzah. Each room gets a protection from the mezuzah that's on that room. So the Torah points out, based on the Gemara, that we place the mezuzah on the outer tefach of, if you have, let's say, a very, very wide doorpost, where do you put the mezuzah? On the outermost tefach. Why? Because the mezuzah only protects what's inside of it. So if you were to put the mezuzah all the way inside the wide doorpost, then the whole rest of the width of the doorpost remains unprotected. And you don't want to leave it unprotected. So the Torah writes that that's why a person, that's why we put the mezuzah there. In addition to the reason the Gemara gives, that we put it there so that you should encounter the mezuzah immediately when you enter the house, because that's the, you're supposed to have that hakara of the mezuzah. You're supposed to remember what it represents when you enter the house. When the Torah describes the benefit of being protected by mezuzah, he says something that's somewhat curious. He writes that of the reasons that he gave for having a mezuzah, number one, that it's arichas yamim. Number two, that it gives you protection. Protection is a bigger deal. The Torah says it's a bigger deal. It's a bigger reason. It's a tam gadol. What in the world does that mean? I would think Arichas Yamim is plenty tam gadol. So Beis Yosef is bothered by this, meaning why would protection from physical harm be considered more of a valuable benefit than long life for a person and his family? I would think the opposite. So a number of answers are suggested. Beis Yosef suggests that certainly we value life over protection of your home, most people at least, but the protection of the home is a greater miracle. Why is it a greater miracle? Because it's very common for people to live a long life, so it's not really considered to be an open miracle. But protection of the home means that even when there's a dangerous situation going on, even when it's Matzei Azeka, when the whole city's under attack and every home is being broken into, and even under those circumstances, your home will be protected. So Arichas Yamim, so it's natural. A lot of times people live long, but if everyone's home is being broken into and every home on the block, or imagine, a natural disaster happens. So we had this with Sandy also. There were houses where one neighbor flooded the 2 feet into the first floor, another neighbor's entire basement was flooded, the one in between, not a drop of water. What happened? Really good mezuzahs, right? Maybe, potentially, I don't know what happened, but that's why it's a greater miracle. That's what the Beis Yosef suggests, similar to what the Gemara in Pesachim says, that when you're Ola L'Regel, there was a guarantee. The Gemara in the first part of Pesachim, Daf Chesam Beis, in the Shliach Mitzvah Sugya, that if a person's Ola L'Regel, he's guaranteed that none of his possessions would be damaged, would be stolen while he was gone, and that's a very, very great miracle, that everything would remain protected. Beis Yosef also suggests another reason why it's a greater inyan to be protected. He says that the Torah doesn't mean that the protection of our homes is of greater value than our lives. Certainly not. What he's saying is that Hashem's willingness to protect our homes with the mezuzah on the outer doorposts is a greater statement of the nature of Hashem's relationship with us. Because most kings place guards at their doorposts. And here the king stands guard at our doorposts. So it's a tam gadol because this more represents the nature of the relationship HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with us. This is not Chassidus Shetayr, Beis Yosef, on the side of the tour. He says all of this. I'm not making it up, you can look it up. The Bach, and by the way, when we learned Hilchos Mezuzah, one of the great Sukhiyos I've had in my life was 1 year on Thursday nights. I don't remember how this happened or why this happened, but about like, probably like 10 years ago, on Thursday nights, I was invited with a small group of people to go to, maybe less than 10 years ago, maybe like 7 years ago, I was invited with a small group of people to go learn with Rav Schechter in his house on Thursday nights. So it was me and Rabbi Shai Schechter and Rabbi Ezra Schwartz and Rabbi Mati Neuberger went to learn with Rabbi Schechter every Thursday night. So he asked, what do you guys want to learn? So I said, Hilchos Mezuzah. So I was the only one that voted, so we learned Hilchos Mezuzah. So when we came across these inyanim about how mezuzah provides protection, first of all, it's just an amazing experience because it was the only time I've ever seen a shechter struggle in learning. It's important to realize that struggling and learning is something that even big people do, right? That even people who always seem to have it together, right? But they got it together by first, struggling a little bit. I remember Rabbi Akiva Eiger that we spent 2.5 hours on, and that he was going back and forth reading it over and over and over again, and, to see in case he was. And it wasn't the first time he saw that Rabbi Akiva Eiger, obviously, right? But he quotes that Rabbi Akiva Eiger a number of his svarim actually. But still, just going over it, over it. So that was one great Indian. The other great thing that came out of that is one week, and I always tell this story, so forgive me for telling it again, but one week, we were supposed to learn from like 7 o'clock to like 8:30, right? And then we all had things to do, we're busy people, right? So we start learning at 7 o'clock or maybe 7:30 or something, and Rav Schechter gets very involved in the sugya that we were learning. Then it's just time goes, and he looks up at 11:30, and he says, "What time is it?" So he said, 11:30, like we were waiting for him to ask, you know? So, because, you know, normally he would say, okay, good night, everybody, like, you know, he let us know. So, 11:30, he's like, ooh, I didn't even daven Maariv yet, like, he, like, completely lost. So, okay, I guess I'll daven b'yichidus, you know, like, completely lost himself in the learning, to the point that he just completely lost track of time. So why did I mention this? When we got to these sources about the mezuzah being a protection, like, he had such a visceral reaction to it. Like, it was so interesting to me. Like, he didn't want to be mekabel that's the case, that a mezuzah has a special segula of protection. He kept saying, yeah, like all mitzvahs protect you. You know, like anytime, every source that I read, a mezuzah protects you. He would say, a mezuzah, like every mitzvah, protects a person, you know, and keeps a person safe and gives a person. Like, he just, I don't know why. I mean, it's really seems to be pretty explicit to me, you know, it seems pretty explicit in the sources, but he was like very strong about that it was, it's like any other mitzvah. Okay. The third possible explanation of what the Torah means, the Bach suggests that the protection given by the mezuzah, it's not a schar for the mitzvah. The schar for the mitzvah is arichas yamim. Protection is a natural thing, just that mezuzah does. Meaning it's like if you eat matzah on Pesach, and now you're not hungry, your schar is not that your stomach was filled, right? That's just what matzah does. When you eat it, now you're not hungry anymore. The schar for the mitzvah is something else, right? But it's not that your stomach is filled. So the idea that mezuzah protects you, it's just what mezuzah does. It's like if there was a mitzvah to have a security system on your house, so you wouldn't say the schar for the mitzvah is that your home is more secure, right? That's just what the security system does. So that's how the Bach understands it. That's what he means by gedola mizu. That when the Torah writes that gedola mizu, that it's the bigger reason. And finally, the Taz in Reish Peh Hei says that the greatness of protection that's given by the mezuzah is in the fact that unlike arichas yamim, you don't need to do anything to receive the benefit of protection. For arichas yamim, you have to put the mezuzah on the doorpost and use the mezuzah as an impetus to remember Hashem's presence at all times. If you never ever pay attention to the mezuzah, you will not have arichas yamim, says the Taz. But the protection will happen even if you don't even focus on the mezuzah at all. Right? The minute to touch the mezuzah and later became to kiss the mezuzah. But initially, the Rambam talks about looking at the mezuzah as you walk through the door. Right? So, and then the later Pesukim quote a minute to touch it. And then later on, people started to kiss it as well. But the idea is to focus on it as you go in and out of a room. So that, says the Taz, that's what grants you your arichas yamim. Protection, it's an automatic. And then the Torah says, in what seems to be a statement of the obvious, that despite of all the benefits that you can receive by having a mezuzah, don't do the mitzvah just for the benefit, do the mitzvah to fulfill the Ratzon Hashem. The Gilead Marshal, Rav Shlomo Eger, says, yeah, but meaning you don't have to, like, you don't have to push it out of your mind. Like, if you know that this will also provide protection, you're allowed to think of that too. It's just that the reason you do any mitzvah is l'shem mitzvah. Good. Okay. So now, what does that tell us as far as our question over here? As far as when a person is down on his luck, when you're suffering from terrible things. So, what would you say based on all this? Is it the right thing to check a mezuzah? Yeah, but is there any other Gemara in Shas about what else a person should do when they're suffering Yisurin? Yifashresh b'masav. Much easier to check a mezuzah than to be in fashresh b'masav. Right? Bitola b'avon bitl Torah. Meaning, it could be that all of these things are true. And they are. I mean, obviously they are. But that doesn't necessarily mean that our first line of defense is to get your mezuzahs checked. The first line of defense is what the Gemara says directly. You're fashish b'masav. And see what you're doing wrong. And if you can't think of anything you're doing wrong, look harder. But avon b'tzal Torah, we're all subject to that. But nevertheless, checking mezuzah is part of the process. And especially if you haven't really ever gotten it checked by someone who knows what they're doing, by someone who's really good, so then get it checked by someone who's really good, because anyway you have to do that. You have an inyan of checking the mitzvah, you have to check your mitzvah anyway to make sure that you're doing the mitzvah properly. Rav Sturmbach has a remarkable comment in the Tshuva, in Chelek Aleph of Tshuvas V'Hanhagos, Siman Tov Resh Mem Hei. It's not his own comment. A lot of times he quotes from other Gedolei Yerushalayim, from people of the previous generation. He's very cognizant of that, of always trying to quote from the Brisker Rav and from other Gedolim who he was zocha to encounter. So he said that he remembers hearing an old psak in Yerushalayim from Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld that, I'll read it to you. V'shamati ora'a l'beis ha'yisomim diskin. There was an orphanage, the Diskin Orphanage. Sha'kesef shenitan la'azor li'yisomim, that when people donate money to the orphanage for the orphans, mutalem likach me'akesef livdok mezuzos bi'er ha'kodesh ha'matzim li'asmos. You could use the money donated to the orphanage to check mezuzos on stam, people's houses in Yerushalayim. Why? Because it's going to keep the parents alive and then there won't be yisomim. Wild, no? Like, to see such a direct correlation. That will protect people from ever becoming Yisomim in the first place. So, what do you tell a person? They didn't, the mezuzah was upside down. Does that mean that it's my fault? Does it mean it's your fault? Look, life is not black and white, right? There isn't one cause and effect and whatever. You know, if you forgot to set your alarm one night and someone broke into your house, is it your fault? It might be the fault of the person who broke into your house also. It might be that that there was something else that happened that caused the person to break in. You might have done other things that are wrong. It's a failure in your alarm system if the mezuzah was not done correctly. But it's important not to see things as totally black and white. And it's also important to always remember, Tamim Tiyem Hashem Elokecha. Part of Tamim Tiyem Hashem Elokecha is to do his mitzvahs properly and be medaktik in all of his mitzvahs, including the mitzvah mezuzah. Now, having said all that, if you ask around a little bit about the protection that mezuzahs afford, almost everybody with some life experience that you ask will have a story about how something, we got the mezuzah checked, and you're never going to believe where the psul was. I asked Rabbi Reuven Mendelitz, I emailed him this morning, he's the author of Inside Stam, as you well know, because he's spoken here and because I quote him all the time. I asked him, come on, what do you got on this? What do you got on checking mezuzahs? He gave me story after story. He said, B'didi Ava Uvda, this story. You know? He told me he got a call one night at 1 a.m. A guy's calling, can I bring over my mezuzahs to check? It's like 1 a.m. He says, okay, I'm still up. You can bring him over. The guy says, okay, I'll be there in an hour. I'm in Bnei Brak now. So why was he in Bnei Brak? He realized why the guy was in Bnei Brak. Because Rav Chaim is already into checking mezuzahs. The guy obviously had some tzara. He went to Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim said, check your mezuzahs. So his next call was to his sofer. So he goes over to Rav Reuven's house. And Rav Reuven checks his mezuzahs, and he found a couple of psulim, and there were a couple of mezuzahs with a missing letter. And he remembers the guy's name because it's an unusual name, I guess. He doesn't hear from the guy for a while later. 9.5 months later, he sees this guy, and the guy calls him or something, and he says his name, and Rabbi Mendelitz says I checked your mezuzahs, didn't I? So the guy says, yeah. So he said, excuse me for prying or for asking. Did all the inyanim work out okay, whatever it was? He said, yeah, we hadn't had a child in 7 years. We went to Reb Chaim that night, told us to get our mezuzahs checked. So I'm calling you to tell you Mazel Tov, this morning was the bris. Okay? and he has like 10 stories like that. He had an even crazier story. I'll tell you. He said that there was a child in his neighborhood that was brought to the pediatrician for a regular check. A pediatrician listens to the heart and says, you got to get to a cardiologist right away. So they bring the kid to a cardiologist. Cardiologist gets angry. He says, this is terrible. There's a problem with his heart. Pediatrician should have heard this year, the first time he ever checked the baby's heart. This doesn't develop overnight. How is this not picked up on? There was too much space between the chambers of the heart, something like that, some sort of heart deformity with too much space between the chambers of the heart. How did the pediatrician not notice this? So they go back to the pediatrician. He said, I know, I'm telling you, this is the first time I ever heard it. I check him and I know and I listen for it and I wouldn't have missed it. I'm confident this is the first time it ever happened. It's crazy. So they check the mezuzahs. Of course, Eretz Yisrael, that's always the first line. So they checked the mezuzahs, and the child had 2 weeks prior to that doctor's appointment, the child had switched bedrooms. had moved into a previously unoccupied bedroom in the house. They checked the mezuzah on that bedroom has too much space between the two bases in the word Levavcha. I mean, are you kidding me? They fix it. He goes back for a 6-month checkup with the cardiologist 6 months later. He has shown remarkable progress, remarkable recovery. Unbelievable. I mean, this guy, look, Rabbi Mendelitz is not the kind of guy that, like, makes up these stories. So look, does mezuzah provide protection? Of course it does. But you know what else provides protection? Everything. All mitzvahs provide protection. It's true where Shechta said all mitzvahs provide protection. First line of defense is not necessarily mezuzahs. First line of defense, yifashish b'masav. That's definitely the first line of defense, because that's a mufurish gemara. That's what you're supposed to do. But certainly the idea that checking a mezuzah is a valuable thing to do from a halachic perspective to make sure you do mitzvah Hashem properly, as well as from a protection perspective, seems to make a lot of sense. Okay, that was Shaila number one. Okay, which we have like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, so three. Which one was three? Three was the one, about the guy who filled the car with diesel. All right, this really should be an easy one, no? I thought, like, right off the bat, this is like the easiest shayla ever. What is the guy? The guy who has the car, what's his halachic status? He's a what? He's a shomer sachar, maybe, right? He's not a shomer chinam, he's a shomer sachar. Even if you were a shomer chinam, what's a shomer chinam chayavin? Negligence. Is this negligence? Yeah. It says diesel. I mean, come on. It's right. I would think that would definitely be negligence. I would think it's worse than negligence, depending how you learn pshia. Some learn pshia as this way. That is, he's not the mamazik. He's a mazik. He's taking something that destroys a car, and he's destroying the car. He's physically putting something into the car that is destroying it. What's the difference between that and taking a baseball bat and smashing against the car? It's not just a lack of shmira. Lack of shmira is he parks it somewhere where something could get to it, whatever. He's putting the thing in the car. He's destroying it, right? So it's davar pashut that he's going to be chayiv. So yeah, that is true. However, Rabbi Rice, when he got this shayla, I was in the car with him, and he called an expert in Chosha Mishpat, Rabbi Marburger. Anyone know Rabbi Marburger? He's a big baki in Chosha Mishpat. So Rabbi Rice called him up. He's his go-to guy in Chosha Mishpat. Rabbi Marburger says, of course he's chayiv. He's not a mamazik. But you take a look at the Sma in Simen Shindalit in Chosha Mishpat. First Sma in Simen Shindalit. Ooh, that's intriguing. No, Vazak the Sma. Says the Sma, El Shemikol Makom, Mitzvah Lichnos Imapoalim Lifnim Mishuras Adin. Dafka with your employees, you should always go a little bit Lifnim Mishuras Adin. You have to be a little more understanding. Ukiduchsiv, quoting a pasuk in Mishlei, Leman Telech Bederech Tovim, as long as you know that he didn't do it b'mezid, or you don't know that he did it b'mezid, you should be easygoing with an employee. V'lo od, el mitzvah l'balabayis, litin lem gam scharam imeimaniyim. Pay him for that day's work anyway, if he's an ani, if he needs it, if he lives paycheck to paycheck. Ve'ein lem mayochlu, ukedichsiv seifa dekra, v'archo sadikim tishmar. And that's why the safe of the bus of Baruch Sadiqim Tishmar, that a person should be. So, what does Marburger tell him? Of course, the guy's chayim. But there's dafka in Indian when it comes to an employer and employee, that an employer should be very understanding of his employees. I'm sure there are management books that will tell you similar things about creating the right workplace environment where people are going to feel encouraged and valued and loved and whatever, right? So the employee will feel that, wow, I was able to, right? What's the famous story with the CEO? I don't know if it was a true story or not, probably not, but an employee made a mistake that cost the company like $50 million or something. And the CEO calls him into the office and he says, I guess this is when you fire me. He said, I just spent $50 million on your education. I would never fire you now. Meaning that when a person makes a mistake, it's a learning opportunity, and you can bet that he's never going to make that or any other mistake so quickly again. Right? So that's the Erlich thing to do with an employee. And then Rabbi Marburger says, Rabbi Reis, and he said one more thing. Remember that we're Po'alim of Hashem. And we make mistakes too. And we'd like it if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would go easy on us when we make our mistakes. So I thought that was a nice twist. Now, what if you would have chosen this Shaila as the first Shaila and I would have had a half hour to discuss this Shaila and 10 minutes for the other one? So what would we have discussed for a half hour? It's open to shut case, right? Here's what we would have discussed, which we're not going to discuss, but here's what we would have discussed. If your car gets totaled, who do you go to? Where do you go? You go to the insurance company, right? You don't, right? So insurance is going to cover it. If insurance doesn't cover it, is the employee's problem or the insurance company's problem? What? Oh, okay, so how do we, that may be grandma, whatever. How do we view that? Meaning, does he pay for your increased policy? Does he, are you allowed to double dip? Can you collect money from the insurance and collect money from the employee? Do you view it as like, that's a separate deal? That's why I pay premiums. I pay premiums as an investment, as a bet, right? I'm betting that one day I'm going to total my car, and therefore these premiums are going to be worth it. The insurance company is betting, and they hire lots of actuaries to figure this out, that I'm not going to total my car, or that at least most of us won't total our cars, and therefore they're going to make money, and if I do total my car, it will take me so many years that my premiums will have long paid for it over the years, right? That's what, that, right? Isn't that what actuaries do for a living? They figure that stuff out, right? So it was just a bet. It was an investment. That has nothing to do with the hezek that this person caused you. This person damaged your property. So this is a famous discussion, the Ar Sameach and the Marsham. It gets labedik in terms of how to view exactly what the status of insured property that somebody is that somebody's mazik. So that was Shaila number 3. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody, and I guess next week we'll still be on, unless we announce otherwise.